We are live for the 156th episode of the Bronx Bomber Battle Podcast, presented to you by Six Pack Coverage. I'm your host, Matt Loves Luigi, and tonight it's Andrew and I. Andrew, how are we doing?
First off-season podcast. ALCS is about to kick off with the Houston Astros of all teams in it. We're looking forward to our disappointing off-season on the rise. Football, you know. Not great. Things are they're going.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I'm like, damn, you know, there's other team podcasts. Obviously, only four. You know, you're down to the final four, but other teams are, you know, previewing the playoffs, getting ready for a game one. Like, we're previewing the off season, right? So this is going to be basically, you know, criteria for the episode. We had a vote in our blog, right? 10 people, and basically voted for the 10 best, or we voted on the 10 best free agent targets of the off season. Now, the criteria of this voting was interesting because we voted basically on a scale of 1 to 10, right? 1 being least desirable, right? We don't want anything to do with them. 10 being most desirable. Please get them ASAP. Now, I feel like a lot of us voted based on the Yankees' needs. Like, for example, right? Obviously, you know, the big fish, the big name, Shohei Ohtani. 6 of the 10 people, you know, voted him as a 10 out of 10. But I think, Andrew, I think you and I both voted him, you know, pretty low, because, you know, we'll get into it obviously as the episode goes on, but we think this team needs a lot more and is a lot further away than just getting Shohei Ohtani. As great as he is, obviously he's probably not going to pitch next year. You know, as great of his lefty bat, as awesome as it would be to see him, you know, tear it apart in Yankee Stadium, I mean, shit, him and Judge could probably combine for 100 home runs a year if they both stay healthy. I think if we were a team that was coming off a 95 win season and had just fallen short in the ALCS again, then Ohtani, yeah, that's going to get you over the hump. That could get win you a game or two against Houston that you need. Go for it. We missed the playoffs by 7 games. I think even if you insert an Ohtani into that, let's just look at the 23 Yankee team. If you insert Ohtani's production offensively and on the mound, I still don't think that gets, you know, you could look at war or, you know, wins about whatever. I still don't think that, maybe that scrapes you into the playoffs if anything, but.
Like, yeah, but even so, like he's going to be replacing someone else who, let's say he replaced a guy like, I don't know, Clark Schmidt. In reality, would be someone like Luis Severino, right? But you can't look at his war and be like, well, that's 7, 8, 9 more wins than the Yankees would get, because in reality, he's replacing someone else who already got 2 or 3. So the net difference is only 5 games. Like, the Yankees missed playoffs by 7 games. And to your point about the voting criteria, it's tough to look at these free agents in a vacuum, like one by one, because the Yankees have so many needs. Like, they refused to address left field last year. They spent big on Carlos Rodon to be the number 2 to Gerrit Cole, and he completely flamed out after already missing the first half of the year because of injuries. And then his attitude was an issue on top of that as well, right? Third base, they were committed to Josh Donaldson, which was a disaster. And now they have a rotating door, I guess, of do they go with Peraza? Do they move DJ over there? Who knows what you're going to get with Anthony Rizzo? The Yankees have way too many positions of need to commit to a guy like Ohtani. Like, what is he going to cost? $40, $45, $50 million? In reality, you might need to spread that across 3-4 guys to get comparable production, but at least you don't have gaping holes in multiple spots. Because as it is right now, we're 4th best team in the division, nowhere remotely close to that championship that this team has been talking about for the last 5-6 years. It's going to be a really interesting offseason, and I don't know if I have faith in the front office to make the proper moves. It's going to have to be some combination of free agency, but also some trades, maybe moving around guys at different positions. I don't know, using different analytics. Who knows?
Yeah. Thing with Ohtani, because obviously his agent this offseason is obviously going to make the argument, well, he's 2 players because he's a top 10 pitcher and a top 10 hitter. But, you know, I believe I made it on the earlier episode. He's still one guy, right? One injury happens to him, but that top 10 pitcher and that top 10 hitter, he's gone, right? He's out. So it's still just like a lot of stock to put in one guy, whether it's 45 or however much million a year. And, you know, another thing that I thought about is, you know, he might not be, I believe he's 29, Ohtani. So he's going to be 30, you know, starting next year. He may have, if he wants to keep being a hitter and pitcher, he may have to transition to being a closer, a relief pitcher, and a hitter, because, you know, logging 150, 200 plus innings a year and also hitting, I mean, man, that puts a lot of miles on you. Remember, obviously, he was doing that in Japan, too. So he's been doing that for, you know, further more than he's just been doing the MLB. That tape puts a lot on you. So,
and we'll now this is the second Tommy John surgery already. It's just like at a certain point, it's not
right.
You're not going to hold up.
So, like I said, for us, Otani, not really an able. You know, I mean, he, spoiler alert, he ranked pretty well in our rankings, but let's get into it. You know, a lot of honorable mentions. I mean, I think we had like 35, 40 guys left this. We'll get into some of those, you know, who just missed the cut. But number 10, start off with Reese Hoskins, right? Obviously had the freak accident in spring training this year, right? I not off the top of my head, but I believe he tore his ACL. Could have been his Achilles, but missed the whole year, whole 2023. I mean, kind of scary considering how good that Phillies offense is. And, you know.
And they did say that he might be in play for the NLCS or the World Series. So.
Kyle Schwarber, Cubs scene. Remember that? He like missed the whole year, and then all of a sudden there he is. Like they're like, oh, he's taking batting practice. That was wild. But yeah, Reese Hoskins. He's gonna be 31 years old to start of next year. He's got in his last full season in 22, hit 30 home runs, had a 123 OPS plus. I mean, here's a guy that. Like Andrew, you put in the notes, he's probably not a fit. Like, obviously, Rizzo is probably coming back in 24, and, you know, he's probably just not a fit in this team. And this is something else that is going to be a theme. And, like, I'm just going to say it now because it's the first guy, and I'm probably going to mention it for almost every hitter. But, you know, Giancarlo Stanton being on this team and being as bad as he's been the last 2 years and making the money he makes. And playing the position he plays, because people having your DH be in a situation that Stanton is in, it really just hinders your team. Because just look at all the guys that are free agents that, you know, maybe not be the best hitters. You know, a guy that I like didn't make my our top 10, but I had as a guy pretty high on my list was Jorge Soler. You know, he's a guy, obviously, you know, playoff experience, former World Series MVP, big power, but obviously he's not a good fielder, and it's kind of tough to convince yourself to get one of these guys that's not good in the field when you have Stanton on your team. It really kind of hinders you. So, and Hoskins kind of falls in that category where he's not a terrible fielder, but obviously it's not a position he excels, and obviously he's coming off a torn ACL, so he might not be as nimble or as, you know, fresh as he was, especially now that he's 31. So that's a guy you probably would want to DH, but, you know, us having Stanton, that kind of takes that away from us. So Hoskins probably is a guy that we won't be able to get, and he might cost a bit.
He's a couple, if you figure what he did in 2022, you know, still at the age of 31, he's not really past his prime years yet. For me, and the reason I voted him pretty high up on the list, I think I actually had him like a 7 or 8 out of the, you know, the 1 to 10 scale that you mentioned. It's just because the Yankees haven't really had first base figured out since Teixeira. You think we got super invested in guys like Greg Bird and Luke Voit, and we traded for Rizzo in 2021. He had a really good 2022. They extended him. It's just like there's been some moments here and there, but the Yankees haven't had like that. Lock that guy into first base. 150 starts a year. He's going to play good defensively. Be a power hitter in the middle of the lineup. Third, fourth, fifth hitter. You know, and we were so spoiled, right? Growing up with Tino Martinez, then Jason Giambi, and then Mark Teixeira. You didn't have to worry about the position for like a 15, 20-year stretch. And now they're kind of in a weird spot. So Hoskins definitely fits that need. You know, you mentioned, is he going to be the best defensive first baseman? No. Would he be immediately one of our top 3 or 4 hitters? I think so. But again, the fact that Stanton occupies the DH, you'd want to put Hoskins at some point at the DH spot. Hoskins is a right-handed hitter. The Yankees have been way too right-handed and hitter heavy the past 5, 6 years. Is it the best of fits? Probably not, but it is appealing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like any guy that, you know, has multiple 30-plus home run seasons, right? I believe in 2019 he led the league in walks, right? Always a fan of that. But yeah, like you said, probably not a fit, especially with Rizzo coming back. Let's go to number 9, though. Here's a guy that is definitely a fit, especially with the Dominguez injury. Number 9, we have Kevin Kiermaier, 33 years old, 3-time Gold Glove winner. This past season for the Blue Jays, hit 265, 104 OPS plus. Obviously doesn't light the world on fire offensively. You know, he really never did, even with the Rays. But obviously, great center fielder, good speed, you know, good, always, like Andrew said, always hits well in Yankee Stadium. So, you know, obviously a much-needed left-handed bat, like you just mentioned. So, that's a guy that obviously not going to cost you like 20 plus million a year, right? So that could be someone the Yankees could go and get, and you're not just going to be hindered to just getting him. You could go out and get another guy. So that's a, you know, Kevin, like, I don't want to sound like a Cashman apologist here, but Kevin Kiermaier will be a guy. If that's your only offensive guy you get this offseason, then no, nightmare, right? That's terrible. But if that's one of the two or three guys you add to this offense in the offseason, that's great. Like I said, it's going to boost the defense, add some much needed speed to this team. I mean, for how many years has this just been a slow team? So, yeah, I think that's a guy that Kevin Kiermaier, even though he's only number nine on the list, I think that's a guy that's very realistic for the Yankees to go out and get.
Yeah, you look at a team that has trouble hitting and scoring a lot of runs outside of the 2022 MVP. Defense and speed make a lot of sense, right? Obviously, you mentioned the Dominguez injury. It's going to miss at least half of next year, if not more or all of it. But the Yankees have multiple outfield holes, right? Left field and now center field. Even if he does play center field and Dominguez is ready to go, maybe you put him in left field, right, where his arm strength is a little bit less of an issue coming off the Tommy John surgery. Kiermaier, to your point, three-time Gold Glove winner. Why not just keep him out there? Is he going to hit fourth, fifth, sixth in our lineup? God, I hope not. But if that's like an auxiliary piece. It kind of reminds me of like when the 2013 Boston Red Sox got a guy like Shane Victorino, right? Fits a similar mold, right? Just got a guy who could play the outfield. He's going to come up with some clutch hits. He's going to do all the little things right. And you kind of need those glue guys. And I feel like Kiermaier fits that mold pretty well for us.
Yeah, like I said, he shouldn't be the centerpiece of your offseason. But, yeah, I mean, the Yankees, especially now, it sucks how it looked like, all right, we got our center fielder for next year. This is awesome. And obviously Dominguez gets hurt. And they hope to have him back, you know, maybe by the All-Star break next year. Obviously, we saw Harper have Tommy John come back after 6-7 months. But Dominguez being younger, they probably want to wait a bit longer. And they're obviously not going to DH Dominguez that much if, you know, Stanton's still in the lineup. So, yeah, Kiermaier's a guy that I think would be a good get. And like I said, lefty bat, not that much money. And Andrew, our next guy, number eight. You want to talk about a position of need? Oh, the Yankees haven't gotten a left fielder since Nam. And Lourdes Gurriel, who is still in the playoffs right now, right? He's going to be 30 years old to begin the next season. Made his first All-Star team this past year with the Diamondbacks. 24 home runs, 772 OPS. There's a guy who, again, hopefully it was going to be our second or third best hitter, but look, this hitter with literally a hitter on this, you know, that you look at. Even if their numbers weren't all that appealing or all that amazing, this is a Yankees team that was, you know, a 702 team OPS, right? Like a 227 team average. So any hitter that you see that had numbers better of 230 average and 700 OPS would be an addition to this team. Like, that's where we are, right? So even a guy like Gurriel, it's like, all right, well, you know, 772 OPS, he's probably going to hit in the 250. Like, getting a guy that's going to hit 260 would be a major boost. Like, as sad as that is, like, that's how bad this offense was. This was the eighth lowest OPS in Yankee team history in the 125 years of the New York Yankees, right? This was the eighth lowest team OPS they had. And at one point, I think they were below 300. So, like I said, Gurriel, Kiermaier, these guys don't light the world on fire. We get that. But they're realistic. I mean, if you went out and got both those guys, right? If you went out and got Kiermaier and Gurriel and they're both in the lineup on opening day, that makes your lineup better. I mean, that just think. Last year, who was your opening day left fielder? It was Oswaldo Cabrera. Lourdes Gurriel versus Oswaldo Cabrera, especially considering Waldo had, what, under 600 OPS last year? I mean, that's a major upgrade. You know, and even in center field, obviously, like, Dominguez ended up doing well. But if you had to combine, like, the production the Yankees got in center field with all the different guys put out there, Kevin Kiermaier would probably, maybe offensively, Kiermaier wouldn't stack up or would be able, but, like, defensively, I mean, my God, he would be miles better. So, like, really, like I said, I think people need to consider, look, we all want a big offseason and the Yankees to go out and get as many great players as they can. But, look, I think people need to realize that, like I said, if getting like a Kiermaier and a Lourdes Gurriel would be very good gets and would make this team like significantly better because that's how bad offensively they were.
Yeah, here's where I'm at in terms of how we address, you know, me and you in particular, the way we voted on this and the way I view the Yankees needs this offseason, we were really hard on Gleyber Torres this year. And I don't want to seem like I hate the guy. You've said it multiple times. If Gleyber Torres is hitting sixth or seventh, and you know he's in middle of your lineup, consistent hitter, the production he gave us in 2023 is fantastic. But when he's your second best hitter, and you're talking about extending him, you know, 5-6 years at $20 million a pop to be your second best hitter, that's a problem. So the Yankees need to add guys like this who, to your point, aren't going to light the world on fire, but they're going to give you production above and beyond what they got last year from the Billy McKinney's, Greg Allen's, Oswaldo Cabrera's, right? You need major league hitters, not just a bunch of has-beens. Jake Bowers is another one. You could throw his name into that list too, right? So you add in a bunch of guys who can be the fourth, fifth, sixth best hitter in the lineup. That's fine. We've used this term before too in the podcast. You want to raise the floor because the Yankees had a decently high ceiling. Everyone played to their potential. The Yankees continue to bank on everyone maxing out, and it never works out. But the problem with that is that these guys also have an insanely low floor. And we saw it when they were bad. They were bad, right? They lost 9 games straight coming out of the trade deadline this year. They had stretches where they looked like they couldn't hit their way out of a paper bag. It was very, very bad. So you're not going to go out and get 3-4 Bryce Harper level hitters this offseason. But if you can get a bunch of competent guys that raise the floor on this team, and when you turn on the game at night, you're like, okay, there's a bunch of guys in the lineup who can come through. I trust 5-6 guys on a consistent basis to produce runs. That's what you want. And we're not going to go out and get a bunch of world beaters this year. We just need a bunch of consistent guys above the Jags we had last year. Yeah,
to raise the floor, right? Exactly. And you know, we've been playing this game in the chat during the playoff series, and it with the obviously the series ended, but with the Philly and Atlanta series, I asked the question. I said, okay, assuming, because you know we didn't want to get into an argument of who's the best hitter in baseball. So I said, okay, assume Aaron Judge is the best hitter in baseball for the sake of argument. Assuming Gleyber Torres is the Yankees' second best hitter, I said, how many players in this Phillies and Braves lineup would be the second best hitter on the 23 Yankees?
Each lineup had like 5 or 6
and
guys.
You could literally argue like 13 guys. Like, yeah, like even like obviously the like Harper, the obvious ones, but really even guys like look at Nick Castellanos. That's the like obvious look. They paid $20 million a year for him, yes. But that's the Phillies' 7 hitter. And he hit back-to-back 2 home run games. And the NLDS, it's like we were hitting Willie Calhoun 5th. They got a guy making $20 million a year hitting 7th, getting 4 home runs in the DS. It's like that's the difference. You know, like that, it's unbelievable. Like you look at these teams, like even a team like the Diamondbacks, like Christian Walker, Corbin Carroll, Marte. I mean, all 3 of those guys would be the second best hitters in our lineup. You know, it's and that team won 84 games. Like, you know, that team won 2 more games than us. So you just see
Gabe Moreno, like Geraldo Perdomo, like even that.
Yeah, like I said, you look at these other teams, and the fact is, like, look, the Braves and Phillies both have lower payrolls than us, right? It's like obviously they pay, you know, they paid $20 million for Schwarber, they paid $20 million for Castellanos. I get that. I get that. But still, the point is, like I said, when you have a guy like Nick Castellanos, you know, like a perennial hitter in this league hitting 7th for you, like that's the level
that's the depth we need.
That's the depth that a team like the Yankees can and should have, right?
And like, I don't want to shit on like a bunch of like the younger Yankee fans, you know, whether you're a follower of our socials or you listen to this podcast. But I just feel like there's a disconnect between today's fans who didn't grow up, even with like the last most recent championship in 2009, right? You look top to bottom, how deep that lineup was, right? You had Damon, Jeter, Teixeira, A-Rod, Matsui, Posada. Robinson Cano was hitting 7th. Like, I know that was before he hit like his peak years, but like,
guy like Nick Swisher was like at the bottom of your lineup. And like, he wasn't a world beater, but like, you know, he was like a 20 homer, like 260 average type of guy. Like, yeah,
it's, the Yankees
like
don't have that. The Yankees, once you get to 6th, 7th in their lineup, it's just wasteland. You're like, you're just hoping and praying you can flip the lineup next inning.
The average Yankee hitter that came to the plate this year had a .227 average with a 701 OPS. And the only having a 701 OPS for a .227 average is actually like better than expected, right? But like the Yankees, I think they were still top like 9th or 10th in home runs, so that's why, which is still surprising because other than Judge, I think it was Judge, Glaber, Stanton, and Volpe were the only ones that hit more than 20 home runs. So I don't know how they finished top 10, but that's another story. But yeah, it's, you know, that, like I said, like obviously we're doing the list, but the list is kind of just like a track. He's not that good, but hey, this guy would be our second best hitter. Like a 24 home runs and a 772 OPS. That's pretty much what Glaber did. I think Glaber was had two more home runs and like 18 points higher OPS. But yeah, like Gurriel's production this year, that's our third best hitter. So really, that's kind of where we're at. So let's go to number 7. This is another guy, right? That falls under the would it be great to have, would add to the lineup, but he's probably a DH and we don't have a spot, but he was voted 7th. And it's J.D. Martinez, right? He's going to be 36 years old, 6-time All-Star, 3-time Silver Slugger. I mean, he's still got it, man. 33 home runs, 893 OPS this past year. I mean, there's another guy where, you know, and like I don't want to keep repeating myself, but if you don't have Stanton, like, wow.
That's a great guy to throw at the DH spot. Give him a 1-2-year deal.
Great bat in our lineup. Like, easy threat to hit 30, 35 home runs. But like I said, the Giancarlo Stanton issue, it really hinders us. It's, you know, it's a guy making $32 million a year who just, you know, had an 87 OPS plus, right? And that's our DH in a position now, especially now with the universal DH where, like, the average DH ain't having an 87 OPS plus, right? Especially on a good team. So, yeah, like, JD's, like I said, we don't have to spend too much time on JD, but, yeah, just a guy who would be a good get, would be good to have. He got voted pretty well, but
probably not going to. They won't even pick up the phone and talk to him. There's just nowhere to put him.
So let's go to number 6.
This guy concerns me. Sorry.
I was about to say, go for it.
Matt Chapman is number 6. You'll see on the screen here. It's just like, for me, he's a guy who's talked about as like a top 1 or 2 free agents in the entire market this year, right? Like Ohtani, obviously, is the big fish. You'll see later on, we got a couple top dog pitchers on this as well. But Matt Chapman's the guy that everyone talks about, right? He's won a platinum glove, actually twice. He's going to play absolutely stellar third base defense, which is a position we had issues with the past few years with the Donaldson mistake. But I just feel like that the amount that they're going to have to commit to him to get just marginally better than average offensive production is just not going to be a good use of the funds required. Like, again, the Yankees should be able to spend whatever they want. I don't think they should have to spend $300 million on a payroll to win, although they could. In theory, if you're a well-run baseball operation organization, you could find ways to spend $240, $250 and get a fully well-rounded lineup. And the Yankees are going to have to overpay for a guy like Matt Chapman, and that really hinders them with whatever arbitrary cap they're going to set for themselves. They're going to say, well, we don't want to go above this number. Maybe they want to do the second luxury tax tier or whatever it is. Right? They're going to set some arbitrary number in mind. They're going to stick to it all year. They're just going to gaslight the fans, say they're going to go out and improve the roster, but they're not going to breach that cap, right? And a guy like Chapman is going to throw you way past that, or it's going to be your only offseason move. And then you're going to leave center field and left field and the bullpen all exposed.
Yeah, the thing that concerns me with Chapman is, and I voted him pretty well, but it was one of those things I voted him and then kind of like thought about it. And you look at his numbers, like a lot better numbers in Oakland, right? Like his last 2 years, like his OPS plus, like all his offensive numbers are down. Like I said, he's still a great defender, but yeah, like I never like getting a guy who's in his 30s, who's the last few years has kind of just dipped offensively, right? Because look,
it's exactly what we did with Donaldson.
Yeah, I hate to say it because I think the Yankees a couple years ago made it a point to address their defense, which obviously I don't blame them for because I think there was a couple years where the Yankees defense really wasn't up to standard. But I do think that, and we're going to get into this with the next guy because this is a good segue. I do think they might need to sacrifice some defense this year, this upcoming year, because look, like a guy like Matt Chapman, it's like he's a great defender. But I'm like, we don't like need, like we had a great, Donaldson was a great defender at third. And even DJ, when he played third, was a pretty good defender. So we've had good defense at third base. We just haven't had any offense. We need offense. Like at the end of the day, like great offense outweighs like great defense. You know, like you'd rather have a great offensive player who's average defensively than a great defensive player who's average offensively. You know, it's just like what it is. And like, look, so that's why, like you said, Chapman's going to be probably too much money. You know, like and for a guy that's what, like hit 17 home runs last year, you know, his numbers, offensive numbers have kind of significantly dipped since Oakland. So, yeah, Chapman was voted pretty well. But like I said, I don't think that's going to be a need. And I don't think like the Yankees are going to go for him. But number five, this is an interesting discussion because it kind of gets into a problem the Yankees have of like holding on to guys. Right. And like I feel like the Yankees in their minds are thinking, well, we don't need a catcher this offseason. I mean, we have Austin Wells. We have Ben Rortved. We have Kyle Higashioka. Jose Trevino comes back. And it's like, look, none of those guys move the needle, especially offensively. Especially offensively. And number five, we have Mitch Garver, who obviously, you know, was in the playoffs with the Twins. He's going to be 33 years old. Silver Slugger winner. He has had some trouble playing.
Rangers.
I said Rangers. He used to be on the Twins. Come on, he's still playing.
Famously traded Luigi, for IKF.
Famously traded for Luigi's a casual. But anyways, Mitch Garver on the Rangers. Look, he's had trouble having full seasons, right? That's kind of one of the things where you say he's 33 years old, but you want to talk about a boost offensively behind the plate. I mean, 870 OPS this past year. It's really – look, like the Trevino is the type of catcher – like, even, like, who knows where he is in his timeline with the injury. But even if they plan on, like, you know, having him back at some point next year and, like, he's still their starting catcher. Like, you know, in their minds, like, they're going to be in the play. If they're in the playoffs next year, Trevino will be the catcher. The type of catcher, we always use the Maldonado comp, right? Of, like, hey, Maldonado's on the Astros and he really doesn't hit, but he's a phenomenal defensive catcher. You could have that if you have a great offense. If you do not have a great offense, you cannot be like, well, we're going to have a catcher that is probably not going to hit all year. But, hey, he's a great defender. It's like, yeah, cool, man. We can't score. You're like, we already have enough dead spots in the lineup. We can't afford another one with our catcher. So Mitch Garver's a guy that I wouldn't mind the Yankees going after.
Yeah, my big concern with the catcher situation is the Yankees are going to look at what Trevino did in 2022 offensively. I know he tallied off in the second half, but – they're going to be like, well, you know, this guy could just be a league average hitter and a platinum glove winner behind the plate. They're going to look at 2023 and be like, well, he was hurt the whole year. So like his offensive numbers that were in the shitter, they just disregard that, right? So they're going to brush aside the upside of a guy like Mitch Garver. I'm worried that they won't even consider offensively any kind of production. And they're going to look at a guy like Austin Wells with a couple timely hits, some couple nice bombs in September, but like his average was still under 200, right? Like he doesn't offer much. It was always, yeah, this guy can hit a little bit. He's going to not be great defensively. I wonder if they're going to just bank on Wells's upside offensively and be like, well, if he can't play, we can have Trevino be a late inning substitution for defense. And that's going to be it. Higgy's been with the team forever. Where does he fill into that? Again, you can't carry three catchers. Rortved, they're going to have to trade or do something. You're not just going to stash him back in AAA. It's tough that you have four guys that are all pretty mid, if you ask me, on the roster already. That catcher's not going to be something they even remotely consider, and they should.
Like that's kind of the point of this argument. So we almost, I feel like this is just the main point of this is like, look, Garver would be a great get. We know they're not going to do it, but hey, like this, and I think, I forget who said it, but someone said, like, look, Austin Wells is nice, and even same with Oswaldo Cabrera and Oswald Peraza, but I'm sorry, these guys aren't good enough that if you get a trade or if there's a free agent you want, you can't say, well, we really want that guy, but we got Austin Wells. It's like, man, he's not that level. If you want to say that about Volpe, fine. He showed you enough flashes. He had a 20 homer, 30 stolen base year. I know the average in OPS was a bit low, but fine, right? That I get that. But really, those other guys have not shown you nearly enough at the major league level for you to like, not do certain things because of them, right?
You mean not trade for Gerrit Cole ahead of 2019 or 2018, excuse me?
Or you know, not trade for Zach Greinke at the deadline, let Houston get him. That's another episode. But this is going to be – this is the one I'm most excited to talk about because this is a very interesting one. Number four, the highest pure position player, Cody Bellinger. So he's going to be obviously – you know, we all know the Bellinger story, right? 2019 MVP, also won the Gold Glove that year, was on top of the world. He was awful in 21 and 22, right? Just brutal seasons. Apparently, he had some injuries, right? And was playing hurt. And, all right. You know, this past year with the Cubs, he had a bit of a renaissance, right? I mean, 307 average, 26 home runs, 881 OPS. Obviously, he's still a very good defender. He's a lefty. Now, the thing with Bellinger, it's not the fit. Obviously, he fits. We need an outfielder. We need lefties. He's only 28. He's obviously a fit. The thing is the money. It's like what it's like it really is. It's like if you're like interested in free agency and what guys are going to get paid and what contracts are going to let. This is such an interesting case study because like here's a guy who, like I said, won the MVP. Right. And is what it was his second or third year, like very young, won the MVP, was on top of the world, and then was literally went from being one of the best players in baseball to one of the worst for a couple years, at least at the plate. He was still a pretty good defender. And now, you know, he, like I said, he had a great year, but it's one of those things where you kind of say to yourself, all right, well, he's still, you know, a couple years removed from being really
being
bad.
Being one of the worst hitters in being baseball. One of, yeah.
So, you know, like, what are his agents going to ask for? Are they going to say, oh, well, here's a former MVP coming off of three, you know, his best year, renaissance. And he was hurt. They're going to use that, say he was hurt, and now he's not going to be hurt. It's interesting. And like, I think Bellinger would be awesome on the Yankees. I think he would really add to the team. But if that price tag is just insane, you know, like,
it's going to be like million. 4 years, $100 million, like $25 million AAV minimum, I think.
See, like, I feel like I would, if that was the contract, I think I would do that if I were the Yankees. You know,
on his age, he's probably going to push for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, that's a
closer to $200 million.
But that's the thing. If he regresses back to that hitter again. That's the thing. What if they're not liking the thing? Because every team is going to use that against them, right? If it's like, you know, and like how an arbitration is basically the team just shitting on each other. Like, it's almost going to be a form of arbitration or negotiating at the free agency table where they're going to say, oh, hey, look at what this guy. They're going to be like, look at your 21 and 22 stats. Like, you hit 25 home runs and were like a 200 hitter. You're one of like the worst hitters in baseball. Like, come on. Like, you can't ask for this much. So it's going to be interesting. But I do feel like the Yankees need to be in that discussion. They need to be in that conversation. And if it's not too crazy of a price, that's a guy that it just fits your team so perfectly. Like you said, the lefty aspect alone. Just, and you know, maybe you try to sign him. You said he's probably going to push for a longer term deal, being that he's 28. But maybe you give him a bit higher AAV for a two or three year prove it deal, right? Because maybe he doesn't get the money he wants. You know, hey, you're 28. You could still sign a 2-3 year deal and be 30, 31, and hit free agency again and get that 5 year mega deal, right? If you continue this, so
yeah, who knows? There's way too much risk in that. He's at a spot where he's got to capitalize on the season he just had. He had a really good walk year. You're not going to take a bridge here, bridge deal at this point. You want to maximize it now, and then if you still have anything left in the tank,
I mean, Correa did, but 35, that Correa kind of like, you know, kind of did obviously at his point, but you know.
He had all those injury concerns.
Yeah, I was about to say that he had the injury concerns, so that's kind of makes sense. But like I said, that's definitely going to be a guy the Yankees are, even if they don't get, they're going to be in the running for, and it's going to be interesting to see what he gets. And, you know, like I feel like he's going to be a guy that isn't going to be gotten right away because teams are going to, like, no team's going to want to bite. You know, whatever is going to be the starting offer, they're going to kind of, the teams are going to look around and be like, oh, is that too high or is that too low? Like, where are we at here? They're going to want to try to get, like, no matter what, teams are going to try to get it down a bit. So we'll see. We'll see. But number three on our list. Now, we got a pitcher. Now, here's the interesting thing with the pitcher. Obviously, a few years back, Yankees get Gerrit Cole. We pay him a lot of money. Then last year, they get Carlos Rodon. They're paying him a lot of money. So you say to yourself, are the Yankees really going to go out and spend another $25-30 million a year on a starting pitcher?
I just don't believe they will.
Especially coming, like I said earlier in the show, coming off literally their eighth worst offensive season in the 120-year history of the team. And you're going to – I was even one of the people that last year said, hey, why are we getting Carlos Rodon? This team needs offense.
Unless you just accept that that's your DNA, that you are going to be a team that has a really bad offense. And the way to counteract that is to have a really, really, really good pitching staff.
Maybe.
Because knowing you're not going to score a lot of runs and you're going to win a bunch of 3-2, 3-1 games.
Maybe their thought process is, okay, to make the offense better is going to take so many steps. But hey, if we get what, like a number three on this list, Blake Snell, right? Probably, you know, obviously hasn't won it yet, but most likely going to win the Cy Young. Obviously a very interesting year with, you know, he think he only went into the seventh inning, like what, like four or five times, like almost never went past that thing. Always five, six innings, but 2.25 ERA, 182 ERA plus. I mean, he's, like I said, he's probably going to be his second Cy Young. He won because he won one back, I believe 18 or 19, but yeah, it's that's going to be guys. Yeah. It's probably going to want a lot of money, right? Coming off a Cy Young year. And yeah, obviously has experience in the AL East, but I don't know. That's just, like I said, even last year, I was at a place where I said, man, all that money for Rodon, like, why aren't we using that on a big bat? Like, we needed another bat. And I think it's
that was the worst thing.
Same feeling this year, right? Where it's like, look, if you want to get another start, like, I really don't think, I think I said on the last episode, I really think you could go into the year with Cole, Rodon, Nestor, Schmidt, and maybe if you, I don't know if they want to, like, Mike King, I think, showed enough to earn a spot in, at the back end of the rotation next year.
I think
if
you want to keep him in the bullpen. Yeah.
If you want to keep him the multi, I get it. But I mean, man, he was awesome. So, like, I think that that's your five, and maybe you want to get another five, six kind of bullpen, could be a starter floater, like, you know, fill the Domingo Germán role. Like, it's, then go for it. But, like, man, just go out and spend all this money on another starting pitcher. Now you're going to be committing between Cole, Rodon, and let's say Snell. You're going to be committing almost 80, 90 million a year to the top three of your rotation. And, like, really, what good is that if your second best hitter is Gleyber Torres? Like, I don't know. I was very surprised to see how high up on the list Blake Snell was. And spoiler alert, there's another starting pitcher next. So, like I said, that's why, like, obviously, we, you know, it's not a dictatorship. It's a democracy. We all voted. Right? It was the vote. But I was very surprised. I said, like, I'm like, I wonder if people just looked like, oh, yeah, Blake Snell, he's great. We're going to vote him high. It's like, man, but, like, do we really, like, do the Yankees really need Blake Snell? The Yankees, like, you know, it's just not, it would just be unnecessary. Like I said, I thought it was last year, them getting Rodon.
Yeah, I don't know if unnecessary is the word I'd use, but it's definitely a misuse of resources, right? If you're going to spend that kind of money, you got to address the offense, even the defense, but you're not only going to go DH, right? So, like, you're going to have to get a guy who plays both ways. Those are kind of one and the same. For the next on our list, the exact same things that we just said about Snell apply. Number two is going to be Aaron Nola. It's interesting that he's higher because significantly worse two of the last 3 years. And he was very good last year. I think he finished
maybe cheaper fourth. Though. That's something to consider though. He's probably
I wonder if that was part of the voting, right? Like, he's a very good postseason pitcher. I think he finished fourth in the Cy Young voting last year, was top three or four back in like 2018. He's been with the Phillies his whole career, but is he a guy that the Yankees need to go out and break the bank for? Is he going to be a difference maker when you still have gaping holes on basically the entire left side of the defense, right? Outside of shortstop. I don't know if that's the guy you go for. To your point, because he's struggled in two of the last three regular seasons, but he still has a lot of upside with his stuff and how he's performed in October. Could he be a guy you get for half the price of Snell and maybe you can convert to a number three starter anyway? At significantly lower AAV, maybe. And I'd be curious. I wouldn't go anything more than like 3 years and $50 million for a guy like Nola, but that's probably not going to be enough to sign him. So
that's so far. I was thinking of the exact same contracted number. I was like 350, probably, like, I could go for that. But yeah, look, like I said, 4.46 ERA this past year. So like I said, maybe that helps. Like, he had a bit of a down year. He didn't have, like, obviously Snell has the Cy Young on the walk year. That helps him. Nola 4.46 ERA, that's going to probably lost him a few million dollars. So maybe he's a bit more affordable. But yeah, I think bottom line, this team doesn't need a starter. And number one on the list, go figure, was Shohei Ohtani. Now, like I said, Andrew and I think we both voted him five, right? Where it's like, obviously Ohtani's the best player in baseball. Obviously, I mean, the guy, 922 OPS, 3.01 career, right, ERA. 44 home runs last year, 3.14 ERA, like 11.5 strikeouts per nine. Like, I think he was top 10 in OPS. He's literally insane. He's literally a cyborg. But man, this team is so far away. Where, like, I'm not gonna sit here and on my high horse and be like, I wouldn't even be excited if they got Ohtani. Like, no, of course I would. That would be amazing. I'd be like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah, but you said it at the top of our show. He's
a back-to-back home runs.
Yeah, but you said it earlier. He's a finishing piece, right? Like when you're on the cusp and you need someone to put you over the top, you go all in, you give him whatever he wants, and you blow the doors off the competition next year.
And he said he's not going to go to a winning team. Right. Like, once again, hey guys, break.
That's
news.
Not us right now.
Team right now. Yeah, like it's the harsh reality, but yeah, it's like, oh, I want to go to a team that's like a, you know, basically a playoff team. Like, could that be, I don't know, like the Phillies or the Dodgers or a team that, I don't know, won more than 82 games this past season? I don't know, it's just a thought. So, yeah, like as amazing as Ohtani would be, and as much as, like, I'm just imagining right now him, his lefty swing in Yankee Stadium just hitting 50 home runs, like, it would be amazing. It'd be
so much fun.
But like I said, if this team repeat, like had the identical year that they had in 22, right? Where even if they didn't win the division, let's say they made the playoffs, they got by the wild card, they made the ALCS and they got wiped. Then I would say, you know what? All right, why not? We made the Final Four again. Why not get Ohtani? But like even last year when we made the, like, cause you know, you make the Final Four, like, and I know it's not called that obviously, but you know, you're the final four teams of the baseball, and right, that's very good. It didn't even feel like we scraped and clawed and barely got there last year, you know. And
they almost lost to Cleveland,
right? We felt like that, and then now, of course, this year it's like you don't even make the final 12. Like, you weren't even in the top like 15, right, of like the best teams in baseball in terms of record. So yeah, like I said, Ohtani, he's a finishing piece. He's With the money we would have to pay Ohtani, we could probably get Bellinger, Gurriel, and like two good relievers. You know, like that's the reality, and that would help our team way more than just getting Ohtani. Who, look, he's coming off Tommy John. Like, who knows? Maybe he's not even as effective as a hitter next year, because you know Tommy John is like it's a surgery. It's a major surgery, and he's gonna.
Well, after his first year, didn't he struggle his first full year back, and then
yeah, and look, and another thing, like you said, people don't realize about Ohtani and a lot of these, like, you know, Asian players, they have a lot of miles on them, man. These guys are just like, especially like, you know, you always heard like the stories of like Dice K and Tanaka. We're like, oh yeah, they matched up against each other. They both threw 265 pitches in a game. And you're like, man, we used to hear about that shit in like the 1920s. Now this happened in 2008. What, like, that's a very much like Ohtani. Like I said, Ohtani's been playing both ways for years and he's going to be 30 years old next May. That's something people like just kind of are like not even.
He has a level of wear and tear that's comparable with like a 35-year-old.
You always say like it's called age versus mileage, right? Like he has a lot of miles for a guy who's 29. So, you know, like, look, he's probably still going to be the best player in baseball for at least the next 5 years, but it is something to consider. And at the end of the day, like I said, as much as I would love to see Ohtani in pinstripes, I just don't think it makes sense right now. But some guys that missed the cut, like I said, I mentioned Jorge Soler, which, you know, is a guy that, like I said, is more kind of a want. I mean, I love his game. I love how he has postseason experience. Obviously, who could forget that home run he hit, World Series MVP, and that Braves run. Had a good year with the Marlins this year. Whew, that's one of those balls that, like, whatever StatCast said it was further, right? Like, no, you're wrong. But, Andrew, I really like yours, honestly. I want you to put the – I want you to explain the guy you put on this, the guy that didn't make the top 10.
Yeah, so I actually put two names. First, I'll be real quick. Will Smith, the left-handed reliever. Not really a great year this year, but the Yankees don't have any left-handed relievers, and he has a lot of playoff experience. And honestly, I still think there's a lot in the tank with him. That's just a, you know, you go out and you had a piece in the bullpen. Is he going to be like a guy who pitches in the seventh inning every night? Yeah, I think that's fine. You need that. Wandy's a free agent. And then remember a couple years ago, we had Leitke and insert all the other guys I'm forgetting now because they're Jags. But we had, remember, there was like,
I thought you were going to go way back to Chase and Shreve.
You know? No, like a year or two ago, we had like five lefties in the bullpen, right? And they were all kind of like mid.
Yeah,
Joely Rodriguez one maybe.
Joely, yeah.
But so the Yankees need left-handed relieving. I think Will Smith fits that bill. But the other name I put in here, very similar to like an Aaron Hicks type situation, is Jason Hayward. Cubs are still paying 3-4 years left of his salary plus another 5 years of deferred money. Now, the one thing I don't actually know, and I tried to research, like I went through the baseball rule book and it didn't explicitly say it, is what happens with like how you pay him and what the limitations are. Like when a player gets DFA'd mid-year, the team that cut him is on the hook for everything but the league minimum that the new team gets him. But now that a guy like Hayward, and it also applies to Hicks with us, now that they're free agents, does the team that cut them pay the remainder of their money in cash and then they're free to just sign whatever they want? Or are they still limited? Like, is that a ceiling? Anything above what their AAV was, then the old team is off the hook and the new team pays it. Or, you know what I mean? In a situation where, like, I think Hayward makes like $25 million from the Cubs this year. Mm-hmm. If the Yankees were to sign him for like $10 million, do they still pay only $10 and then the Cubs pay the remainder $15? Or does he get all the money from the Cubs plus whatever we give him on top? That part I didn't know. But my concern with him is that the Dodgers do a really good job of revitalizing guys' careers. And he had his best offensive season in like 6 years with them. It screams to me a guy that if you give him a 3-4 year deal, he's going to just revert back to the type of hitter he was. We're going to get another Jacoby Ellsbury type deal on our books. But I am intrigued because he is still a good defensive outfielder. He has a left-handed bat that can hit for average and hit for power. He can still run the base as well. It does balance out our lineup well. And again, if you don't have to give him a lot of money, that could be a guy that maybe not a lot of people are talking about. For what it's worth, he was born in Ridgewood, New Jersey. They immediately moved to Atlanta when he was a kid, but like he's from like he was technically born right in the shadow of Yankee Stadium. I don't know. That's a name that I'm interested by.
Yeah, that's another guy who, like I said, if you're going to go like off-season signings by committee, that would be a good guy in the package to get, right? Because, yeah, like where this team was offensively, and, you know, he didn't light the world on fire last year, right? But, you know, look, 269 average and 377 plate appearances, like we talked about. The Yankees had a 227 team average. It was the second worst in baseball. Adding a hitter who hit 269 over 370 plate appearances would be a major addition. It's like it's so sad and frustrating to say that, and that's the situation we're in, but it is. Right. So, yeah. And like, obviously, you know, yeah, Hayward's like a 517
OPS plus last year.
Yeah.
Like, you need, like, again, we talked about how many people in the Yankees were below average hitters last year. Anyone who is 5 to 10% better than league average is a huge upgrade of what we had last year.
Literally. And like, Hayward fits that bill. Like, he's a 5-time Gold Glove winner, right? Obviously, he's always been a great defender. Never lived up to the top prospect bill, obviously. I mean, he was all the hype when he came up, but, you know, he still had a very good career, right? And, yeah, that's a guy I think would be really good to get.
Yeah, so I do want to quickly point out, just before we the top five names that missed our top 10, like the first guys below the cut line to making our list, Jordan Hicks. I don't really know where he stands, if he's going to try and be a starter, if they're going to move back to reliever. He'd be an interesting fit. Jock Peterson's name you're going to hear all offseason. He just barely missed our list.
Another lefty.
Jamer Candelario plays more of a utility role, but like he has a decent bat. Gio Urshela, which I thought was interesting that a lot of people would want to bring him back. I don't hate it by any means. And then Jorge Soler, which you already mentioned was one of your guys, was the fifth name below the cut line.
And another note, I think the five lowest vote getters were all former Yankees or current Yankees. I think
The bottom two were.
It was like, you know, Chapman got like very low votes, Seve very low. I think Alex rated Seve like very highly, and we were all giving him shit. But yeah, like Gumby,
Frankie Montas was at the
Montas
bottom.
And Gumby, even like Sonny Gray. It wasn't like Sonny Gray on there. I think he got pretty low.
Sonny Gray and Montgomery were kind of in the middle.
Yeah,
they're actually right next to each other on the list, but they graded below Kike Hernandez for whatever that's worth.
So yeah, like I said, look, we fully understand. Trust me, more than anyone, we fully understand that. There's a good chance the Yankees don't get any of these guys, right? They don't get a single, even out of the top like 15, 20 guys. They might not get it. Who knows? But this, in our opinion, is like, I think, like in your opinion, like we'll just kind of end the show like this. In your opinion, what's like for you the most realistic kind of like ideal Yankees offseason, right? Like something that you think in terms like trying to find the balance between like, all right, obviously like, you know, best offseason would be if they got like Ohtani and this, like, of course, but something, you know, in the realm of possibility that even this front office would do that would make the Yankees at least more than like a 70-80% chance to make the playoffs, because that's really where we are right now, right? I mean, we missed the playoffs in so many games. They just need to find a way to be like, all right, this is probably a playoff team for next year, because I really don't think there's a way that – I mean, they could play above means. They could, you know, over-exceed expectations, but, yeah, they just need to find a way to be a playoff team. So
I think if the Yankees are committed to calling the playoffs a crapshoot, you got to first and foremost just get in. You can't expect to go back and win 95 or more games next year. Like they only won, what was it? It was 82-80 was their record this year. You're not going to make a 10-15 game win improvement unless you spend like $100 million per year to the payroll. To me, the model that I think makes sense, and it's kind of weird that I'm making this comparison, but it's the 2013 Red Sox, which I mentioned briefly earlier. You know, they went out and they got guys like Mike Napoli, Shane Victorino, Ryan Dempster. You got to just get a bunch of guys that are slightly above average. When you have this many holes in your roster, you're not going to go get one superstar, right? Like, they missed the opportunity to get a Manny Machado, a Bryce Harper, a Corey Seager, a Marcus Semien type player in previous years, right? Like, those guys aren't on the market this year outside of Shohei Ohtani, and he's a unicorn, right? He's going to cost way more money than any of those guys, and he has concerns because he's coming off a Tommy John surgery. The Yankees just need to get a bunch of guys who are going to plug holes and elevate the floor on this team. So I would say two outfielders, a utility infielder, maybe a backup catcher, or again, a Mitch Garver type, and then one or two relievers. I know that's, you know, you're signing five, six guys. There are a lot of obviously available free agents, but you don't have to cherry pick from the top of that list. Just get guys in the middle that will come in and add to what we already have, right? Supplement Dominguez when he comes back healthy. Anthony Volpe, you expect to take a leap in year two. Aaron Judge hopefully should be healthy enough to play 150 games again next year and return to his MVP level play. Maybe there's some upside still left in Anthony Rizzo. And then you have Garrett Cole, who's going to win the Cy Young in the American League at the top of your rotation. Like, the Yankees have some level of talent, right? It's not like they're just barren lineup like Oakland or Kansas City or Detroit, right? And even Detroit's not a good example because they have a bunch of young kids too. But there are just a few holes that need to be plugged. And I think if the Yankees can effectively do that, you're talking about adding 7-8 wins to this team, and you're in contention for a playoff spot. Now, there's been some rumors about Juan Soto being available via trade. You're going to get him for 1 year. I don't know if that makes sense. Are there other guys they could get via trade? We're going to hear some names in the next couple of weeks, and we'll talk about them in upcoming podcasts. But the Yankees don't have to do something special this offseason, but they do just need to address some real pressing needs in the roster.
It was almost the same thing as people were saying at the trade deadline. I remember people were like, oh, well, there's really no good position players out there. And people were saying at a certain point, like, man, you just need to insert new faces into the lineup. Like, at a certain point, like, what you're putting out there is not good. Like, at a certain point, you could get, like, you could literally have a randomizer of MLB players and, you know, put them out there, and they would probably be no worse than what you were putting out there. That's how bad you were. You were literally one of the worst offensive teams in baseball. So, really, people, you know, because a lot of people have said, oh, well, this free agent class kind of sucks. Like, no real good hitters. I'm like, no real good hitters. I could list 20 free agent hitters that would be the second or third best hitter on the Yankees if you put them on, if we signed them. Like, that's where we're at. So, for us, like, okay, if maybe we had a great lineup, right? And where you go into the offseason, like, oh, yeah, this free agents class does suck because none of these hitters could even sniff our lineup. We are not in that situation. Like I said, Lourdes Gurriel, Kevin Kiermaier, all these guys, like, these guys would all easily be in our lineup, right? Like, we are coming off a year where like I said on the last episode, where guys like Willie Calhoun and Jake Bowers and Billy McKinney were not only in our lineup, but they were hitting fifth and third and leading off. So we are literally at the point where, yeah, oh, perennial MLB player that has had at least, what, 5-6 seasons consecutively in the MLB where he had, like, was above a league average player. That's where we are at right now. And like you said, raising the floor. If you went out and got Kevin Kiermaier, Lourdes Gurriel, and, you know, you added another, like, decent offensive, that's a very good offseason. And people may not think it, but guess what? Adding three hitters like that, let's say, to your lineup is going to make you significantly better. Because it's not like you're inserting those hitters for league average hitters. You're replacing those hitters like guys who, like, think about the amount of guys that this Yankees 2023 Yankees team played last year, hitting their lineup, that were like below 150 hitters, below 600 OPS guys. It's like, if you had to combine them all, they probably accounted for, you know, 1,000 at bats or whatever, right? Donaldson, McKinney. It's like, you know, you don't have to go through all the names, but really, it's not even like you're in. It's like Lourdes Gurriel, like I said at the beginning of the show, your starting left fielder opening day was Oswaldo Cabrera, who was brutal, you know, and we thought, you know, maybe he'll have a good year. He was awful. So, like, really, like, inserting a guy who's a 780, like, let's say you're going to have a 780 OPS, that could be 200 points OPS higher than Waldo was last year. That's where we are at. So people don't realize how big of a, like, just having a left field, like an everyday left fielder that, like, is decent, it's going to be like a culture shock. It really, I really don't think people are understanding that. Like, people are going to see, like, well, if we're not going to get a guy who's, you know, a 40 home run hitter, then what the fuck? Like, that's what we need.
Yeah,
but,
like, I get it's fun to simp over these like, middling guys and try and be like, oh, look how smart and edgy I am because, like, I see all positives in this guy who's otherwise mid, right? Like, wouldn't it be nice if instead of that, you just had a guy who was good and you didn't have to, like, try and see upside? Like, well, his underlying statistics say that he is on the verge of breaking out, or even though I know he doesn't look
that
like
ball
he
had a 931 XBA, it's like, bro, give a shit.
It's like, or he could actually just hit the ball out of the yard, right? And just like, yeah. So I think, to your point, it's culture shock. It would be if you just get a guy in the lineup every day who just contributes. You don't have to question him. You don't have to try and we don't have to get in these debates with people on Twitter, like, well, why do you think he's good? And they come back with all these advanced stats that prove he is. And you come back with a bunch of game situations, like with Glaber. It's like, well, yeah, he does all this well, but then he consistently makes outs on the bases. Yeah. He makes, you know, dumb defensive errors. It's just like, if you don't have to have those battles and you just have a guy who just shows up, does his job every day, and is a consistent contributor to your lineup, that's what we need right now.
Yeah. Like I said, the floor, like you said perfectly, you got to raise the floor, right? And getting in 2-3 new hitters who you can rely on, who have track records of multiple years in this league of not, like, literally of just not being awful. Because we had some, whether it was Aaron Hicks or Josh Donaldson or Waldo or, you know, the catcher position, we had so many dead zones in our lineup. We had so many
Rizzo for most of the year.
Rizzo for a couple months. Like I said, Stanton for most of the year. Pretty, you know, with it. So, like I said, the floor is very low for this team, and just the key is, like, I really do think the key is getting new guys in there. You know, just adding 3-4 new faces to the lineup, to the team. It's needed, right? You can't just run it back. Like we said, you cannot just run it back. You can't just rely on, oh, well, Austin Wells, we're going to get – you can't do it. You need some new faces. And like I said, you're not going to do it all this offseason, right? Rome wasn't built in a day, and I don't think you need to do a full rebuild, especially when you have Judge and Cole on your team. But, yeah, you need to start. You need a few new faces. You don't need to go break the bank, but, yeah, you need some changes. So I think that's all we got. Any final thoughts, Andrew?
I think that's a good place to call this episode. We're going to obviously hear a bunch of rumors and names and all this bits of information probably right after the World Series, right?
So, like, and obviously this episode doesn't account for any potential trade, offseason trade that could be. Like you mentioned Soto. I mean, I could see Cashman making a trade for kind of like a upper C, lower B level guy, right? We'll see. And obviously, if something big happens, some big news, we'll be here talking about it. But for Luigi, for Andrew, this was the Bronx Tomorrow Battle Podcast presented to you by Six Pack Coverage. And we'll talk to you guys next time.